From Feature Story News in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. On today's programme, Europe's most powerful politician, Angela Merkel, is in Washington, where the Ukraine crisis will dominate talks between the German leader and President Obama.
Well, the priorities are Ukraine, Ukraine, and Ukraine. Germany's position and the European position on the whole Ukraine issue. How can we best work together to impose the kind of sanctions that will make a difference in the Russian attitude?
Also today, the remarkable story of the former death row inmate found innocent just days before he was due to be executed. And the pop star turned symbol of the Ukrainian revolution calls on the Obama administration to save the country she loves.
Be the leader. Stop the war. Help Ukraine keep its freedom.
That's coming up on FSN Reports after our latest summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. Ukraine is reinstating military conscription in order to deal with ongoing security threats in the east of the country, according to interim president Oleksandr Chernov. The presidential decree was issued as militant pro-Moscow separatists continue to occupy government buildings throughout the east, a threat President Chernov says Ukraine's helpless to combat. Meanwhile, Ukrainian officials say a Russian military attaché has been held in Ukraine on suspicion of spying. The official, who was not named, has reportedly been engaged in activities not in accordance with his diplomatic status. Anya Ardayeva reports from Moscow.
A spokesman for the Ukrainian Foreign Ministry confirmed that a Russian naval attaché at the Russian embassy in Kiev had been detained on Wednesday. He was declared persona non grata and ordered to leave the country. No details of who exactly this official is or what activities he was involved in were released. It's not clear whether the incident was connected to the occupation of government facilities in eastern Ukraine by pro-Russian separatists. Russia and Ukraine blame each other for ongoing unrest in the east of the country. Moscow denies any involvement.
The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says at least 33 people are dead after an airstrike by government forces hit a market in the rebel-held city of Aleppo. The attack came the day after government aircraft bombed a nearby school, leaving at least 10 children dead. The United Nations Children's Fund, known as UNICEF, says it's outraged at the wave of indiscriminate killings. German Chancellor Angela Merkel is in Washington this week to meet with members of Congress and President Obama. As Alice Olstein reports, the main topics on the docket for her visit are cooperation on the Ukraine crisis, trade, and the ongoing row over the U.S. government spying on Merkel and her people.
This week, Chancellor Merkel and President Barack Obama plan to discuss moving forward on the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, known as TTIP for short, and working together within NATO on countering Russia's actions in Ukraine. It's the first visit between the world leaders since documents leaked by Edward Snowden revealed that the U.S. National Security Agency had wiretapped Merkel's phone calls and conducted mass surveillance of average citizens. Revelations that have put a strain on U.S.-German cooperation on other matters.
Turkish riot police have used tear gas, rubber bullets, and water cannons on demonstrators defying a protest ban in Istanbul. The government insisted it would crack down against anyone gathering in the city's Taksim Square, but trade unions decided they would continue to rally. Here's our Europe reporter, Jack Parrock.
40,000 security officers are said to have been deployed in Istanbul, according to the Turkish press, to try to prevent the planned May Day anti-government protests. Several of the protesters have now been injured in clashes with the authorities, and at least five have been arrested. Prime Minister Tayyip Recep Erdogan said the demonstrators should give up hope of gathering in Taksim Square, the centre of many displays of civil disobedience in the past few years.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. Embattled Toronto Mayor Rob Ford has announced he'll be taking a leave of absence in order to get help for substance abuse. There's been much pressure on Ford to step down after he admitted smoking crack cocaine and buying drugs. Nick Harper reports.
Rob Ford's decision to take a break and, as he puts it, go get help, may be the turning point many around him have been hoping for. Toronto's mayor has been involved in a string of controversies, including drunken incidents, making racially abusive comments, threats of murder, and buying and using drugs. He's already been stripped of many of his mayoral powers. But it seems his leave of absence will only be a temporary one, as he says he'll still seek re-election in October.
A gas explosion at a jail in the U.S. state of Florida has left at least 2 dead and 150 injured. 600 prisoners were inside the Escambia County Jail in Pensacola, Florida, when the blast occurred late Wednesday evening. Part of the prison collapsed. Those hurt in the explosion have been transferred to local hospitals, and uninjured inmates are being transferred to other detention centers. Authorities are now investigating the cause of the incident. They theorize that recent flooding may have caused the explosion. Escambia County spokeswoman Kathleen DoCastro says search and rescue crews are still combing the debris.
Search and rescue has performed a primary and then a secondary sweep of the building. They are going to continue to sweep the building until all persons are accounted for.
And that's the latest Feature Story News. Rebecca Foster reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports. Germany's leader Angela Merkel is in Washington this week to meet with members of Congress and President Obama. The meeting comes on the heels of both the US and European Union expanding sanctions against Russia over the ongoing unrest in Ukraine. A pivotal EU figure, Ms. Merkel is in the capital to tackle cooperation over the crisis, trade interests and the ongoing row over the US government spying on both the German leader and her people. Our reporter Alice Olstein has the story.
On Friday, Chancellor Angela Merkel and President Barack Obama plan to discuss moving forward on the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, known as TTIP for short, and working together within NATO on security cooperation. But first, she'll meet today with a group of senators on Capitol Hill, including former ambassador to Germany, Dan Coats.
Well, the priorities are Ukraine, Ukraine, and Ukraine. Germany's position relative to, and the European position, the whole Ukraine issue. How can we best work together to impose the kind of sanctions that will make a difference in the Russian attitude and behavior? Right now, we haven't been able to do that. And it's going to take us working together to really make these things effective.
Because of Germany's close economic and political ties to both Russia and the United States, some in Washington see them as a vital go-between, while others question their loyalties. Merkel has recently sought to affirm her alignment with the United States, saying publicly she hopes to advance a big trade zone with fewer barriers and wants to cooperate closely with the Obama administration on the future of Ukraine. And just hours before arriving in Washington, her government also denied entry to former NSA contractor Edward Snowden, who had been invited by progressive lawmakers to testify in an inquiry about U.S. government spying. Merkel was publicly outraged last year upon learning, thanks to documents provided by Snowden, that the U.S. had been tapping her phone, but she is not expected to strongly press the president about it on her visit to Washington. Snowden's lawyer, Jessalyn Radak, said denying him entry is another sign that Merkel does not want to jeopardize U.S. government relations.
This is telegraphing, I would love to give this guy asylum, but it wouldn't be politically expedient. You know, disappointing, and it shows how subservient a lot of the European countries are to U.S. pressure.
Radak said she hopes Merkel does press President Obama about the spying allegations, as there are a lot of unanswered questions.
Like, how long had they been surveilling her, and what did they do with those records of surveillance? Are they in the Utah data storage facility? Where are they? You know, the Texas facility, and where are the storage of the communications of completely innocent German citizens right now? Because all of that information, if it's people who are not criminal targets, that information should be destroyed, not retained.
Another major focus of Merkel's visit is trade. She'll be giving a speech at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Friday on TTIP, the sweeping free trade agreement currently being negotiated between the European Union and the United States. Her administration and the Barack Obama administration both vocally support getting this agreement done. But many U.S. lawmakers, public health advocates, and environmentalists have protested. Melinda St. Louis with Global Trade Watch explained some of their concerns.
There's already very free trade between the United States and Europe. Tariff rates are very low on most goods. And so the goal of this agreement, given by those who have been calling for it, is to have what they call regulatory convergence. And there are consumer safeguards that have been specifically targeted by large corporations in their public comments with respect to this treaty, from genetically modified organisms, the bans on some of those products in the European Union, to financial regulation here in the United States after the financial crisis. These are all aspects that have been targeted by corporations and that we're concerned could be included in this agreement.
The next round of TTIP negotiations will begin later this month. In Washington, I'm Alice Olstein.
This is FSN Reports. Outcry continues over Oklahoma's controversial attempt to carry out the death penalty on Tuesday in a case the White House condemned as inhumane. The state governor ordered an investigation into the incident involving Clayton Lockett, who died 43 minutes after the lethal injection process began. What was supposed to be a quick and painless death, eyewitness accounts described as slow and agonizing. The bungled execution has opened up discussion on the broader issue of the use of capital punishment and the numerous errors that plague the process. Ron Kine from the non-profit organisation Witness to Innocence told me why he has devoted his life to the abolition of the American death penalty.
I was convicted and sentenced to death for a crime that I did not commit back in 74. I was 9 days from execution. The only way I got out was the murderer actually confessed. He said he was walking down the street, experienced an epiphany, walked to the nearest church, and confessed to the resident preacher. Other than that, I'd probably be dead today if that didn't happen. The death penalty is just wrong. There is no good reason for the death penalty in the United States. We're the only Western civilized country, besides Belarus, that has the death penalty. We've grown out of that. We've grown as countries. We've grown as societies. We're supposed to be smarter than that. Yet we still have this archaic, barbaric death penalty. We got to stop it.
Ron, do you have any statistics on the numbers of men who have sat in your position in that cell on death row innocent of the capital crime they are going to be killed for?
We have right now 144 of us that have been on death row waiting to die and then found to be innocent and released. Interesting enough, very rarely was any of these released by the system. They were all released, like I was, by some outside source. Somehow else, somebody found that they were innocent. We've killed too many people to find out they're innocent later. We have Reuben Cantu. We have Carlos de Luna, Larry Griffin, Todd Willingham. I could go on and naming these people. They were killed to find out later that they were innocent. What we have done, we've started an organization called Witness to Innocence, where we are totally, our membership is death row exonerees. And of course, you know, a man can have his wife or, you know, whatever with him there. And this is what we do. We enable, we empower our death row exonerees to go out and speak and to end the death penalty in the United States.
Ron, what do you say when conservatives like yourself, but people who sit in a different camp on the death penalty issue, say to you, well, the punishment must fit the crime? They reach for the Bible and they quote you an eye for an eye.
First of all, I get into the fiscal part of it, where it costs $3.2 million on average for a death penalty case. Now, that includes appeals, locking them up, keeping them in there, everything. It's what it is. It only costs about $500,000 to keep a man for life. Is it really worth spending all that kind of money? What are we getting for it? If the guy's already locked up in prison, he can't hurt anybody in there unless somebody's worried he's going to kill another murderer or something. I don't think I've ever heard anybody complain about that. In most murder cases, what we advocate is giving life without possibility of parole. He'll never be out on the streets again. He's not a threat to society anymore. So why go and spend another $2.5 million to kill him? It's totally ridiculous. This eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, that came out of Mosaic law. But for conservatives or just even human beings alike, the thought of innocently killing an innocent man should say right there's something wrong with the system. It doesn't work.
You were wrongfully convicted of murder in 1974 40 years later, can you still remember how you felt as a young man on death row?
Of course, I was irate. I was bitter because I'm going to be killed for something I didn't do. I had to question my belief in a God who would let them kill me for something I didn't do. I was, kind of scared. Oh, my God, I'm in prison. And not only that, I'm around real murderers. There's real murderers all around me on death row. I'm thinking, oh, my, what am I going to do here? But most devastating of all, worst part of it, is when I realized that the government did not make a mistake in my case. It wasn't just a simple error. They manufactured and fabricated the whole case against me and framed the case against me because a police officer did the crime. The actual murderer was a police agent. And they framed me that the realization sitting down my death row cell, oh my God, they know I'm innocent and they're pushing to kill me anyway. Not only am I going to die, but now I realize too, I'm in a justice system that allows this. I've been taught ever since grade school, that the justice system is the best in the world, that there are checks and balances to make sure everything is right. And sitting on a death row realizing that really happens in the United States, it makes you really feel homeless.
Ron Kine from the non-profit organization Witness to Innocence. Now, the United Nations humanitarian chief has admitted the most recent Security Council resolution on Syria is not working. Valerie Amos says aid is not reaching as many people as was hoped, and the plea to stop targeting civilians has been ignored in the 2 months since the resolution was passed. It comes as at least 33 people were killed in an airstrike on a market in Aleppo. Nick Harper reports from the UN headquarters in New York.
It was intended to ease the conflict. But in the 2 months since the United Nations passed a resolution to get humanitarian aid to besieged areas of Syria, fighting has only intensified. Homes continue to fall. Communities burn. And children are still being pulled from the rubble. Now, this frank assessment from the UN's humanitarian chief, Valerie Amos.
I've told the Council that Resolution 2139 is not working.
Amos had just come from briefing the Security Council, where she told member countries the situation was getting worse by the day. Clearly frustrated, she said the differing opinions on the Council, with Russia backing the Syrian government, was hampering progress.
The political differences amongst Council members is itself having an impact. So the Council itself needs to work on ways to bridge that political gap because it's having serious consequences for humanitarian operations.
A number of leading academics and agencies have jointly accused the UN of being overly cautious for waiting for the government's permission to deliver aid to rebel-held areas. That's something which so far the regime has not allowed. Peggy Hicks is the Global Advocacy Director for Human Rights Watch.
The reality is that the current approach is leaving hundreds of thousands, millions of people without access to aid.
Hicks feels the Security Council must respond to the lack of progress, as doing nothing will further undermine its authority.
The Security Council can't afford to have its resolutions be blatantly ignored the way that Syria has ignored this one. And in this instance, the resolution we're talking about actually makes that clear. The last paragraph of this resolution talks about the fact that the Security Council intends to take additional steps if it's not complied with.
But while the Council falters, the violence continues. Their meeting came just hours after 18 people, 10 of them children, were killed in an airstrike on a school in Aleppo. Reports suggest it happened during the children's art exhibition. And now the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons says it will send a team to Syria to investigate claims the government used chlorine gas as a weapon against civilians. With the fighting growing fiercer, the regime is re-establishing its grip on the country. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad this week announced he would seek re-election at the polls in a month's time. a third term in office for Assad is virtually guaranteed. Western countries have denounced the process as an undemocratic charade, as opposition leaders living in exile are banned from standing. So as change from within is seemingly impossible, many are looking to the UN for results. The problem is, the Council's path to progress seems blocked. Its last resolution has been largely ignored and unenforced, and any new resolution that includes consequences for non-compliance is unlikely to pass the vote. Although there are calls for stronger UN action, it seems no one's quite sure how to make that happen. Nick Harper, New York.
Finally tonight, FSN Spotlight, our new segment taking an in-depth look at a story you might have missed. With today's edition, Simon Marks.
On FSN Spotlight today, a clarion call for American leadership by a woman who has become a symbol of the struggle to protect Ukrainian independence. Ruslana Lyzychko first burst to prominence 10 years ago when she won the Eurovision Song Contest, a widely followed annual event across Europe that pits various musical acts against one another. Think of it as American Idol for countries. Hers is Ukraine, and when protesters descended on the center of Kiev last year demanding the ouster of pro-Russian President Viktor Yanukovych, she joined them. On New Year's Eve, as the country's fate hung in the balance, she led protesters in the Maidan, the central square of the Ukrainian capital, in an emotional rendition of the country's national anthem. Last night, here in Washington, Ruslana was center stage again. She was given the Distinguished Humanitarian Award by the Atlantic Council at the organization's annual dinner. And she spoke passionately about the need for a much greater degree of U.S. leadership to stand up to Vladimir Putin and truly stand by the people of Ukraine.
As we gather here tonight, the sun is about to rise on a new day in Ukraine. People of the world, I scream for help. This is the tragedy of the 21st century. This is the biggest crisis since World War II. For the first time since 1945, one country takes away territory from other country, Ukraine. This is a challenge to the world, to all countries, to all political leaders, to all people. It's Putin's challenge to all of us. His propaganda is a machine against the truth. Putin is preparing his way to Kiev. He started his terrorist operation in east of Ukraine. Russia's special forces, terrorists, get into Ukraine more and more. Some of them are those who were in Chechnya, in Georgia. Tomorrow, we will wake up and see that Putin took away everything he wanted. Putin uses just one rule, that there are no rules for him. He provokes a third world war. It pulls us into darkness. But Ukraine emanates light. Our Maidan was a breakthrough of the 21st century, a victory of the peaceful power of the people. Today's Ukraine is a battleground between light and darkness, between truth and lies, between war and peace. Here's my appeal to America. Mr. President Obama, words cannot stop tanks. War can only be stopped with resolute action. Be the leader. Stop the war. Help Ukraine keep its freedom. America, be the leader for the world. Be strong. Europe and the rest of the world will follow you. This is your final chance. If you don't do that now, we will lose democracy, security, and the whole system of international relations forever. Don't wait for a new tragedy to happen. One tragedy already happened on the Maidan. Another happened to the Crimea. A third one is happening in East Ukraine. Help us stop Putin's aggression. Stop his megalomania. You are acting as if Putin is on Mars, but not on Earth. America doesn't want a war, so then show that you are able to stop the war. Please do everything to save human lives before it's too late. Look at Ukraine. Look at Maidan. Look at us. We had no weapons, and we went against snipers with the flag and the anthem of Ukraine. We were fearless. We sacrificed ourselves for the future of Ukraine and the world. America, go for it. Show that the global interest is about private. Show that we can be great, not mercantile. Unite the world. Apply real sanctions to large companies in Russia, such as Gazprom, Rosneft, Russia's the banks. To the big men of Russia, political leaders, show that you are all together. Block Putin. Make a global boycott of any cooperation, even in the most important projects. Give all necessary assistance to Ukraine and the equipment for which we asked. Celebrities, don't be silent. We are waiting for your statements in support of Ukraine and peace. Declare your stand against the war. President Putin, if you want to destroy Ukraine, you must understand it's impossible. The spirit of Ukrainians are undefeated. You should know when people fight for their country, they lose fear. I have no way back. I started to struggle on the Maidan, and I will fight to the end. I am not afraid of anything.
Ще не вмерла України ні слава, ні воля.
Ruslana leading last night's Atlantic Council dinner guests in a further rendition of the Ukrainian national anthem and throwing down a gauntlet for the Obama administration, directly urging the president to do more to protect her country. With FSN Spotlight, I'm Simon Marks.
And that's Thursday's FSN Reports. Coming up on Friday, a special edition of the programme delves into a story of corruption, death and retribution in modern Russia. That's Friday, but for now, I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington, alongside producer Kate Fisher and Rebecca Foster on the Bulletin Desk. For everyone with feature story news everywhere, have a great evening. Goodbye.